Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back, everybody, to a very special episode of Not Another True Crime Podcast. Yes, I'm Sarah Levine.
And I'm Danny Murphy. But Sarah, you know, we're not important today, and that's okay.
It's true. We're not your only partners in wine, crime, and time, because we are here with YouTuber, and honestly, she's great on Instagram too, guys, Chelsea Suarez.
Ah! Hi!
Hi,
oh my God, it's so good to have you here.
Yeah.
I'm so honored to be here. I mean, I feel like I was like dropping little hints to Sarah and on the on the podcast Instagram page for a while. It's like, hey, if you want me to come in, let me know. You know, shameless plugs. It's fine. That's how we do.
We love a shameless plug.
I'm so glad you shamelessly plug, because you're doing so much stuff that we're obsessed with too. I mean, any person who's anti-MLM is a friend of ours. So we're happy to have you here.
Love that.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what you're doing anti-MLM wise?
Yeah, so there is a subgenre of commentary content on YouTube called anti-MLM content. If you're listening to this podcast, you most likely know what an MLM is, but a multi-level marketing company, also known as network marketing, also known as legal pyramid schemes, also known as social selling, direct sales. It goes by everything. That's why, if you notice, I've been hashtagging social selling on my Instagram reels.
I thought that was a Selling Sunset spinoff. I was like, damn, this girl's in real estate too. God bless. Okay, good to know.
Hey, there is one of those in Tampa now.
That's true.
All of it's fake. Yes. It's so strange. I can give you the tea on that off camera. Ooh, but okay. It's a movement, so to speak. I don't really like calling it a movement, but it is. And it's people debunking... I roast people quite a bit, because I'm like, listen, if you're going to say dumb stuff on the internet, I'm probably going to make fun of you. However, I care about you. I don't want you to be in an MLM. I personally, and a lot of other people too, go over the cult aspects of it, the manipulation, the faith manipulation, the fear mongering, the gaslighting. There's so much that goes into it, and it's just so insane. And that's what I do, is I debunk it. I do deep dives. I do reaction videos. And yeah.
That's awesome. And I love that you approach it from a way where, like, you have fun with it, but you also understand. It's the thing, because me and Sarah always talk about this. Like, we understand how people wind up in cults. You know what I mean? It makes, and, like, also then, like, you're like, A to B equals C a lot of times. And, like, they just get led to that situation. And also, when you're in something for so long, it's hard for people to realize around you what's going on. Mm-hmm. And then also the thing, too, like, oh, they invested so much time to this. They're like, no, this is my thing. Like, so yeah. It's a very hard awakening, wake-up call. So it's good that you put in content that's honest but also approachable to kind of help them get a middle ground, and then get the people who beat it to have a fun place to be.
I agree. And a lot of people will say, like, oh, well, you know, you're just, you know, making fun of them or something like that. And it's like, I don't think you understand, most people who make this content, we're in one, so we get it. And a lot of people have said, like, oh yeah, it's like, no offense, but it's like the new true crime, which I don't think that's the case. But
it definitely is like a new like era of it, because I feel people, there's such a thing with true crime when people are like, oh, it has to be like the 2020 special of like the murder, and you're just like, oh, this thing that, like, you're like, oh, I hope that never happens to me. But crime happens to people every day, and it can happen online, and it can be like in such a sneaky way that you don't even know what's happening.
Well, everyone has a connection to a multi-level marketing company. Either you were in one, you know someone who was in one, you know someone who got scammed, or someone who is legitimately, it's a commercial cult. And it's really unfortunate, but I like to get people out of them and learn to just make fun of yourself and be like, oh my God, I really said stuff like that. That's embarrassing. And that's okay.
Which MLM were you in? We got to know.
Well, fun fact. So I was in three of them over the last 10 years. Well,
overachiever.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. Over the last 10 years, I joined three of them, which the first one was Chloe and Isabel. I think that one closed already. It was jewelry. The second one was Lime Life, or Limelight. Yeah. They changed their name.
They changed it.
So dumb. And that one was makeup. And then the last one was Rodan and Fields. I quit every single one of them within 72 hours of joining them.
Wow. Because
something didn't feel right. So, yeah, the main reason I got into this content is because I live in Tampa, Florida, and Monate is just taking over, and at that time especially too, was just taking over like a virus. And it was COVID too, so
there was a lot of viruses going on.
Well, I also have a question, and
because this is how MLMs are so good at what they do, in that sense that so many of them have the same principles, but they market them so differently. You were like burned once and then burned twice, but then to join a third, like, is it just like because you're like, oh, this one might be different? Is it kind of like when you just all try to date guys named Chad? You're like, no, you're this like, one will
gonna
be different. Or yes. Like, because is it the, in terms of like, how, what was like your thought process being like, okay, I'm done with this one, but oh, this new opportunity seems like it actually could be promising?
You know, you'd think that I would have learned. But the thing was, is that the people who recruited me, like the first one, it's actually kind of funny because the first two were like almost the exact same scenario. So the first one, I was like looking for like different sales jobs. And so I found it on like Glassdoor or LinkedIn or something like that. And they legit called me and like did like an interview. I had no idea that it was a, you know, any type of recruiting, anything like that. And then same with Lime Life. I had no idea. I thought I was just going to be just like a sales rep for them, which I would have been fine with. I mean, I can sell anything at all. I've been in sales. I mean, I still kind of consider myself in sales being an influencer, but I've been in sales for over 10 years. I've sold, you know, penis medication, which that was a fun one, new construction homes, spinal surgery, lip injections, like everything under the sun. So I was like, oh, you know what? Jewelry, that's okay. I can do that. Or, oh, makeup, I can definitely do that. Like I'd already started my YouTube channel. And then I like went through the training, just I watched basically two videos on their like internal system. And I was like, oh, this is the same shit as last time. Like, I don't want to do this. They bamboozled me. They really got me. The second lady got me through LinkedIn, and she had, oh, I hate LinkedIn. And that's why I have PTSD from it. But she under her title, she had like a beautiful headshot, and under her title was like regional director, blah, blah, blah. And
all the buzzwords.
Exactly. And I didn't realize, you know, what that, I was in sales. I was in, you know, the throes of corporate America. And I was like, oh, wow, that must mean something important, right? I mean, I didn't know she was just a sales rep who was bullshitting everyone.
I feel it's also that thing too, where especially like, I mean, obviously now we look at like LinkedIn is everything differently, but like a few, even like just like 3 or 4 years ago with LinkedIn, I'm like, well, you have to be a legit business to be on LinkedIn, because I'm like, that's the business platform networking thing. I would never assume people would want to like troll so hard or like get away with all this stuff that they would go to LinkedIn. I'm like, no one chooses to go to LinkedIn. You go there because you need to. Yeah.
Could you imagine if that's the next place where the Tinder swindler goes?
Oh, I think
that's the only platform he's allowed on at this point. Like, all right.
Just putting up job listings for people.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. 200,000
salary.
Unpaid wife.
Oh, God.
Actually, you pay me. That's the job. That's Oh, my gosh. I'm really excited to get into this case, actually. Yes. Chelsea suggested it. It's really like an intersection of multi-level marketing and, I mean, what more could she want?
Truly.
Yes, truly. So today we're going to be talking about the murder of Paige Bergfeld, or is it Birchfeld?
I don't know. I'd say Bergfeld.
That's what I thought too. That's the way it's spelled. Before we get into the episode, I wanted to read a LinkedIn, literally, guys, LinkedIn message I got from a man by the name of Dave. He said he listened to the podcast on the Life Vantage guy, Rose, and saw that the lawsuit is kind of four-year-old news and mostly dismissed as of late 2021. He's totally right. I mean, it wasn't new news. We just were like, oh, let's talk about the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. So totally right. And yeah, I mean, I think there were just parts of the lawsuit keep getting dismissed. So it's not, and Justin was released from the suit like a while ago. So it's definitely
not. We did say
not,
he was dropped from it. So we didn't. Totally. Whitney should not be mad at us. But yeah, sorry, life ended.
No idea. I know, right? Has she DM'd you? Been like, oh. No, but not thank yet. You, Dave, for reaching out and for listening. And you're right. It wasn't exactly like a smoking gun. We just wanted to talk about the Real Housewives.
Salt Lake City, yes. And we're owning that.
It's the most important part. So today we're going to talk about not LinkedIn. I wonder if there's like a LinkedIn killer, but not LinkedIn. We're going to talk about a crime that has multi-level marketing, also a murder. I think this podcast in one could be described in that way. Truly. So we're going to be talking about the murder of Paige Bergfeld and just a little bit about her. She was a mom of three. She was working multiple jobs to make ends meet. And that's going to come up in a second, what those jobs were. But she was, I mean, super beloved. Her brother said that she was the most outgoing person, independent, stubborn at times, just a great sister and a terrific mom. She had a bunch of friends. She had a business selling baby slings and a bit of entrepreneur vibes. I'm liking it. She started a preschool dance business called Brain Dance. So have an entrepreneur here. She also sold Pampered Chef. And the thing is, though, she was like apparently a top sales agent and even earned a trip to the Caribbean, which, I mean, I feel like those trips are never really free.
I always wonder whenever people are like, there's a free, so I'm like, what, how do I get to go to the Caribbean
like
and not
Chelsea
open
knows.
My credit card?
She's shaking her head.
No. So if something is reported on your taxes as income, that's not free. And also another like epiphany that I had in the shower, of course.
Always.
The other day, it was probably like 4 months ago because I have no perception of time. But I was in there and I was like, oh my God, I would hope they're free. Like, it's a work trip. I would hope that it's free. Like, you don't have really, you might have like some like free playtime or whatever. But whenever I've gone for like a work conference or, you know, a convention or something, yeah, you have like a little bit of free time here and there, like between seminars and, you know, speaking events or a silent auction, I don't know, something. And they act like, oh my God, it's a free vacation. No, girl, it's a work trip. That's on your taxes. And typically y'all are in a shared room. I've talked to so many women who like slept in the bathtub of one of the rooms. And yeah, it's atrocious. But also, on the Pampered Chef, like one of their like internal message board, not internal because it's not, you know, behind a privacy protected wall or anything. I'm pretty sure, I think you found that as well. On there were people who were kind of updating about the case because this case went on for far too long.
Yes.
And like crazy. And one of the ladies was like, oh, she was just such a talented and successful director. It's like, girl, if she was so talented and successful, she wouldn't have had to do the things that she
five jobs. Yeah, working on like three jobs.
That, yeah.
Like, I think it just speaks to like, you can't, it's really hard to make actual money
from
doing
yeah.
these types of companies.
To make an actual profit, even more so. I mean, the average profit is zero industry-wide. You're going to be putting in more money, especially with ones like Pampered Chef. And back then, the internet wasn't popping like it is now, right? And that's why we've seen this resurgence of multi-level marketing companies because of, you know, platforms like Instagram and TikTok and all that. But with this one, it's more of the in-home party. So she would have to buy all of this inventory and all these products and things to be able to sell to people. And the people you're selling to are the ones who are close to you, who are in your town. So it's just very sad. And she most likely did not make much of a profit at all. I tried my very best to find more of like an income disclosure statement, more detailed like financial documents for Pampered Chef. And I could not find them anywhere. I found a little bit about like bonuses and just like every MLM document. It's like how... Like, I'm not high enough to read this. Like, I have to open up another part of my brain to even understand this, and I can't understand it.
It is such a, it's a different language with that. Yeah, it's 100%.
That's fact. Also, the last thing I'll say about the trip, it's not like the company is going like, hey, we're having a conference, we're going to fly you guys out. Like, you have to sell a certain amount to even be able to get to the
That's
trip.
True.
And then a lot of times you have to pay to get there. Sometimes you have to pay for accommodations. Like, it really just depends, but it's not like what a company trip should be, where they just
like thanking you for you.
They're just
work.
Like, no, you have to pay for it.
But it,
basically,
God,
but I'll get into the disappearance a bit. On June 28th, 2007.
You also, I don't think we addressed that on top of, because she had to open and operate so many businesses, she ran an escort service as well as one of her.
You're right. I buried the lead there. The escort service, I feel like, really came out in
after the
investigation.
Yes. Yeah, that's where I thought she was going with this. I liked the twists and turns. Twist. Keep it going, girl. Drop the mic. Let's
Sarah,
go.
Oh, yes.
Cliff, story, I try to
storyteller.
that's the episode. No.
So on June 28, 2007, Paige vanished and left the kids with their live-in nanny. She said that she was going to come back later that evening, but never returned. Her friend Carol Linderholm, and we'll get into Carol, because Carol is like a true ride or die friend, like kind of literally.
Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
So Carol said that she tried to get in touch with her, but Paige didn't return her calls, which was weird. And then Paige's daughter, Jess, who was only 8 years old at the time, left voicemails begging her mom to come back home. Then Paige's dad, Frank, also tried to get in touch to no avail. So finally, after 2 days, Jess and the nanny go to file a police report. So on June 30th, 2007, the Mason County Sheriff's Department calls Frank to let him know Paige is missing, and he immediately knows something is wrong. I feel like it's, you know, you're a mom of three kids. You're not just going to, like, go off the grid and stop answering your calls for 2 days.
And also, like, on top of that, too, everybody has said that she is such, like, a good mom, too, like, doing so much for her kids. So it's not like they're like, oh, this was someone who would just run away from their family.
Totally. And 3 days after she went missing, this was July 1st, her Ford Focus was found engulfed in flames, which is spooky. They investigated. It was definitely arson, was the conclusion. Just the car was burned and, like, nothing around it. And tests later revealed that accelerants were used and the fire was started from inside the car on the passenger side. And then some other weird things that they noticed was that the driver's seat was pushed all the way back. So they kind of concluded that somebody tall was driving, but Paige was only 5'4". And her day planner was found in the car, which was weird to people who knew Paige, because she said she would never leave it behind. And also the dates that she went missing, June 26, 27, 28, 29, were torn out of the planner. So suspicious. Very suspicious.
So of course, so now what they're dealing with is just a missing mom, car on fire. They don't know what is happening, but I know after they saw the car on fire, they kind of were having the new layer of, okay, we are looking for more likely a body than a missing person. And so the investigators kind of, because Paige was married twice. So of course, like 9.9 times out of 10, they immediately start looking into the husbands, because a lot of times that's what happens. So investigators started looking at Rob Dixon, who was Paige's second ex-husband. And she had kind of a volatile relationship, very like on and off again. Frank even called the relationship, was concerned about it. And even so, one night in 2004, Paige called the police saying that Rob threatened to murder her children. I believe he said something like, when you're going, like, she was going out, and then he was like, when you come home, your kids will be killed, which that's fair reason.
Yeah, that's pretty much what he said.
No charges were ultimately filed, but then in October 2005, he was charged with third-degree assault. Rob did deny any physical altercation, but did plead guilty to misdemeanor harassment. The charge ended up getting dismissed. They divorced a year later. But you could see why a lot of people were like, okay, they had a very intense, not emotionally or physically positive relationship. So that's why a lot of eyes were on him.
It makes sense.
Yeah, he seemed like the very valid suspect. Like, when I was researching this, I kind of was like, okay, this is kind of where I assumed it would be going to. But they found out that Rob was actually in Philly at the time. That's where he's been since he moved. They had his iPhone data. He was there every single day around this case. So he was cleared of any involvement. So then they went back to her first husband, Ron Beigler, who was like her high school sweetheart.
Which I'm like, it was very confusing when I was trying to make this outline. We had a Rob, we had a Ron. I was like, oh God, what's happening?
And she had started dating the first husband again. And yes. They were like little kids. They were so excited. I personally love when that happens. We have a close family that were like grew up two doors down from them. Aww. And they got divorced. And then now they, you know, the kids are all grown out of the house. We keep seeing them at like all these events together. And my brother will look at me and be like, oh my God, are they back together? It makes me so happy. Cause it's like our second parents, yeah, basically. Aww. They like helped raise us. And I'm just like, I don't know, are they? So I finally texted the mom and I was like, hey mom, are you dating my other dad again? Like what's happening? And she was like, yeah, we just live apart, but like we have a great time and we love each other. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, kind of goals. I'm like, hey, babe, yeah, you want to get a different house? Can you move out?
Seriously. When people all gave Gwyneth Paltrow so much shit for because her and her new husband don't live together, I'm like, that's genius. They have their space. They get to hang out together. They get time apart. And then you know what? You don't have to rock a boat. It's all nice.
Yeah.
Oh, and that, okay.
Separate bedrooms at the very least.
Separate bathrooms too. Everything's
so crazy for that.
Oh my God, yeah.
I want my own
bed. Why do you think I have a giant beanbag behind me? So that I can just snuggle up while he's either playing video games or just like tossing and turning in the bed.
There we go.
Oh my God, beanbag life, yes.
Yeah, love sack, get it.
So they were married from 95 to 97, but like we were mentioning, they have started to get kind of back together because the main reason their marriage ended was because Ron didn't want kids, Paige wanted kids. So it's sort of like she has her kids now, they can kind of rekindle. Ron was actually one of the last people to see Paige alive around 7 p.m. on June 28th, 2007. They had a date at a rest stop about halfway between their homes because it was kind of like the meeting point for them. She called Ron.
Yeah, because I think they maybe lived like a few hours from each other.
Because I think I like Google mapped. I was like, because when at first I was like, they dated at a rest. I was like, I guess maybe that's just like, maybe had a symbolic meaning for them. And I was like, oh no, it literally is the only place in between the two of them that I think they could go to.
Because I think, did this happen in Colorado, right?
Yeah.
I think it was in Colorado, so they were pretty far apart.
Yeah.
How many times do you think they boinked in the parking lot of that rest stop?
The rest stop employees are like, ugh, here they are again.
Here we go. I mean, it does give like, I'm like, oh, that's such like a, like, for a high school sweetheart, like just like a date, like having like candy in a car. I'm like, that is very
sweet. It is high school vibes for sure. Like, let's hang out in a parking lot.
Yeah, I would be at the Starbucks parking lot. So she called Ron at about 9 p.m. as she was driving back home because it was like a couple miles away. And she said she'd call him again later. But she didn't call. And the next day when he called her, it went immediately to voicemail. So he was starting to get extra panic too while all of this was going on. And on Saturday morning, after still not hearing from her, he called the house and found out Paige has not returned since Thursday. And then he got in touch with the sheriff's office. And also, so all of this, like he was being very concerned and then kind of got placed into like, maybe he is a suspect they were looking into. But again, cell phone records prove that he was hours away from where Paige went missing. So he was ultimately ruled out.
So then Paige's double life emerges. So a few days after her car was found, basically a motorist who'd gotten a flat tire found her checkbook on the side of the road, which like throwback to checkbooks. So they also found her health insurance card or her health card, her insurance card, and a bunch of other stuff. And what was kind of interesting was she tore out basically one check at a time and threw it out the window like dropping bread it like crumbs. She's Gretel. Yeah, exactly. Like leaving breadcrumbs, trying to leave
smart.
A trail.
So smart. So yes. Smart.
Super smart. So one of the cards discovered was a business card for her side hustle as, wait for it, you guys already know, an escort. She was also a former stripper, but I don't know if that was on the business card. So then Rob told police, Rob is the most recent husband, mm-hmm. that he found out Paige was working as an escort in 2005, which led to the end of their marriage, which part of me is like, bro, like, why aren't you more concerned that you have serious financial issues? Because when they first married, he had a lot of money And then he, like, basically lost it all.
Well, that's the thing, because out of all of the businesses that she's doing, I'm assuming this one would probably be the most profitable, because even people were saying that she charged, like, more money than the standard rate that they could find for escorting and everything. And it's kind of like, yeah, like, they were, because at first I was like, oh, is she doing this? Because when I saw that, oh, she started this when she was married to Rob, who everyone said was very wealthy and successful, I was like, oh, maybe she was just doing this because she, like, wanted to. But then I was like, oh no, they had severe financial troubles.
Well, he also filed for bankruptcy like right after they got divorced, which that's such a dick move. Like, and I feel like that's more of a like a control thing, and that he didn't want to pay like child support and everything like that. So then that just put more financial and more stress on her, because she didn't want to move her kids out of this big house. She didn't want them to have to completely change lifestyles, which can be so traumatic for little kids. And this woman was doing everything for her children, and it's just so sad. Also, she went by the name Carrie on her card for escorting.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's just so ridiculous that it's like you're addressing the symptom, but not the actual illness to be like, oh, I don't like that you're escorting, so we're going to get divorced. Like, why don't you think about why she's resorting to this?
She's like, I don't like the idea of our house getting taken away because, for our kids. Like,
yeah. So in 2005, Paige started her own company. It was called Models, Inc. We love a to-the-point name.
I mean, hey, you know, yeah.
Yeah, you get the Models, Inc. So police ended up finding her second cell phone that she used for the escort business. I think it was like a burner phone. Mm-hmm. And figured out that her last call happened around 9 o'clock on June 28th, which is the day that she went missing. So now, as they kind of go through her stuff, a new suspect emerges. So police kind of home in on a man named Lester Jones, who was a client of Paige's, and he had a record that included, wait for it, sexual assault and kidnapping.
Yeah.
So I'm like, we have the guy. This is it. So Lester was a 55-year-old RV mechanic, and he tried to book Paige the day before she went missing. But Paige was pretty skeeved out by this guy and then talked Carol into the rendezvous instead.
OG Carol friend, yes. I was like, because I read something that she was skeeved out because she knew him before. I don't know if that, because I read in an ABC article that she was like, and she didn't want to go do her escorting with someone who like she knew from like her OG life.
Because she didn't want anyone to know about it.
Yeah.
And where, I don't know if you're going to go into this, but where the car was found was right across the street from where he worked.
I mean,
from where Lester worked.
So how do they know each other in real life?
I wasn't able to find. They just said that that's what Carol was told from Paige, that she didn't want the client. That's from secondhand. So they didn't really get into the details of how. No, I was waiting to see if it would come out from Lester, but it didn't. I don't know if it was just maybe she was like, I just don't want to see this man, so this is what I'm going to say. Or maybe took a car to the shop in general that he was a mechanic at or something.
And the shop was only 2 miles from her house. I mean, that's super close.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Carol rolls up. Apparently the first thing that she remembers Lester saying when she got to his house was, I want sex. And she was basically like, okay, cool, call someone else back.
Yeah, which, like,
oh, gross.
And just so terrifying.
And he's married.
So then she, and like,
super creepy.
Yeah, married, yeah. And she said that she gave him like the lightest massage of her life, just because she did not want to really touch him, and then left because she didn't want to, of course, like, it's, that also, I was impressed that, I mean.
I'm like,
Carol, I would have just like ran the
like
other way.
Like one finger massage.
Really, like, okay.
It's like the episode of Friends where Ross is like touching them with the spoons.
Gross. So yeah, like you said, Lester worked at this repair shop that was like across the street from where Paige's car was found. And he's also a tall guy. So remember how Paige's driver's seat was pushed all the way back? Pieces are starting to fit. Mm-hmm. One sort of interesting tidbit is that the owner of the RV shop where Lester worked described him as an honest, hardworking, likable employee. Not really the type of guy who would, like, plan to murder someone, maybe. But when, and also when investigators picked him up, he cooperated. He gave them fingerprints, DNA, the keys to his truck, which was a white pickup. The interesting about that white pickup is that Carol remembered Paige had had a scary encounter with a white truck before she went missing, and I think, like, I don't remember the details, but she was kind of like trying to drive out of some parking lot, I guess, and it tried to block her in.
Yeah, she was leaving. I want to say it was like one of her, because she had her own office space set up or something like that. So then she was like in her car and the white pickup truck came behind her, like kind of trying to block her in. And she just kind of was like, I'm going to rev my engine and go back. I don't care if I hit the car. I just need to get out of here. And then when she was like reversing, the pickup truck ultimately moved out of the way, but it was apparently like the quote unquote scariest moment of her life, she said.
So Lester did deny denied knowing what happened to Paige, but when police searched his property, they found a bra, men's wigs, a gas can, Viagra, condoms, and a burner phone that was like a track phone, I think is the brand. But what a scary assortment of items.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's never a good sign.
Not a good combination. No.
Alone, I think these are fine. But when you have men's wigs and a gas can and Viagra, I'm like, I don't want to be invited to that party.
No.
It's just a lot. Yeah.
And that's also, you can explain away one of those things. You can't explain away seven of them all in the same trash bin.
Right. And the other interesting thing about the burner phone was that before Paige disappeared, she'd received 5 calls from a burner phone. And that phone was activated the same day that Lester had the appointment with Paige's friend. So police looked up CCTV footage and saw him purchasing the phone at Walmart. But Lester tried to basically just pull a Shaggy and be like, no, that's not me. And it's like, dude, we have the footage of you right here.
How much delusional confidence do you have to like see yourself on camera footage and be like, I don't know who that... Wow, it's like King Palmer. I don't know the man at all. Sorry to that man.
Sorry to this man.
That is you.
I know. It also reminds me of like when people will lie on reality TV and it's like, we're going to see the footage in like 6 months. Yeah. Like you might as well just come clean right now.
It's going to come out.
So police basically knew that Lester was the guy, but they couldn't do anything about it until they found Paige's body.
Which was insane.
It is insane, but it's also like really hard to prove a murder charge if you don't have a body. To prove that it's a murder and not like a disappearance.
I also do feel like either was like a part. I feel like it went cold. Like they rushed it once like the escorting came out, just because I feel like how we've seen cases with escorts in the past get treated. I feel that definitely did not help them rush to solve and make major headways. Just my opinion.
I could see that because I feel like it gets so focused on the like quote unquote scandalous aspect of it.
The lifestyle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One more thing about, a lot more things about Lester, but one thing that I found so, first of all, man is terrifying looking. But also there was one of my I don't want to say favorite, but you know, we're all weirdos here. So one of my favorite things is when one of the detectives or sergeant, whoever, a law enforcement person, called him and was like, oh, it's Art Smith with the sheriff's office, just calling you to let you know that we have both your cars ready for you and your wife, because they'd seized them to make sure they searched them thoroughly. And he said, you ask me where I'd bury a body.
What? You just said that unprompted?
Yep. And Sergeant Smith goes, I'm sorry. Lester said, you asked me where I should bury a body. And then again, the sergeant said, when did I ask you that? And then Lester just goes, and then Sergeant Smith again says, Mr. Jones, are you there? And then I guess he just hung up. But Sergeant Smith said that was a very, very interesting thing for him to say, and certainly would be the sort of thing that would go towards being satisfied that he killed her.
Oh, I remember reading that quote, and I think like after that his wife took the phone and was like, he took a sleeping pill and then hung up, and it's like, that's not you don't go sleeping pill to like, you ask me where I buried a body when someone asks you like, hey, your car's outside.
Like, I'm gonna try that. You want to go take Ambien and then call the cops?
I'm going to try that as an interrogation tactic. Like, killer says what? What? Huh? That sounds like what they
did. You did what? Yeah. Repeat that again.
Yeah. Right? Blink twice.
Oh, my gosh. That's so fucking weird. What was the other thing that you found about Lester?
Oh, yeah.
Or was that it?
Who, me?
Yeah. You said you found, like, a bunch of things.
Oh, no, that was just saying that. Also that he's a terrifying creep.
That he got thwarted by Ambien. Him and Roseanne Barr both.
Yeah.
I mean, oh God. Listen, Ambien makes you do weird things and like makes you like, I mean, look at Mike Birbiglia, one of my like favorite comedians. He jumped out of a a window in the La Quinta Inn in Waya, Washington. Oh. And
he has a sleep disorder.
Well, yeah, and it also doesn't make you, like, being groggy and kind of high doesn't make you ask a cop.
Sort of confess to murder.
Accidentally confess to murder.
But why didn't the cop be like, well, where would you bury a body? Yeah, like, I don't, sometimes I'm like, you had the slam dunk almost and you botched it, dude. Like, why didn't you just really?
Yeah. I think it's kind of like when someone, like, says something just so ridiculous to you that you're not expecting. And then like 3 hours later or some, this happens to me and my husband all the time. Like 4 days later, I'll be like, I'll say the response like so passionately. And he's like, are you now saying your comeback to that argument you had 3 days ago with that person? And I'm like, yeah, got
him. You know it.
And he's like, yeah, you
came
up
with the response in the shower. Yeah, that's where always. It always comes.
Yeah. Always. All the time. And so I think that's maybe what happened. Like, I think the sergeant was just like, excuse me, what the fuck did you just say?
And also because, like, I'm sure if you're just calling to have, like, a car be returned, you're, like, probably doing 12 calls during that. And you're like, wait, I don't know what's happening now.
Absolutely. Oh, man. But in March 2012, they did get a break. So this is, what, 3-4 years after the disappearance, right? Yeah. They got a break. A hiker found Paige's remains near where the cards and all that other stuff had been found in a gulch. And authorities were able to conclude that Paige was duct taped and then tied up when she was brought out to that area. So finally, in November 2014, that's again 2 years later, the justice system... She moved slow. But eventually, Lester Jones was charged with first-degree murder, second-degree murder, and kidnapping.
Well, I also was going to say, because I feel like if you guys are listening to, you're confused. You're like, the hike, the remains are found not suit. Like, you're like, what? How were they just found now when, like, dogs sniffing over there? The only answer I could get was that the desert is very big, so I don't really know if that is satisfying to anybody. But I also had that question of, like, how were they having all this hunt looking for her but not finding her then?
Right. How did you not check near the trail of belongings?
Yeah.
I think he like buried her a little bit or like put shit over her kind of. But then again, with like cadaver dogs, essentially, you would think that they'd be able to find them. But from what I was reading, it seemed like just over years, like just earth moves. I'm not a scientist. Yeah. I don't know. But seems like that's what happened. I have no idea.
That makes sense, though. Yeah.
Totally. So then in July 2016, Lester's trial began, and the prosecution's theory was that he was angry that he couldn't continue to book Paige for services, so he killed her. And Lester's ex-wife even testified at the trial that in the late 1990s, Lester held her at gunpoint and threatened to kill her, basically after she left him for another guy. And there was this incident where he followed them home and shot at them.
Oh.
And that actually occurred before holding them at gunpoint.
Because wasn't she like, they got in the car together when they were like looking together and she was like, where are we going? And he's like, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
Like the fuck.
Yeah. And even his current wife couldn't give him an alibi for when Paige went missing. But somehow, and I would love to know if you guys figured out how, because somehow the jury was unable to reach a verdict and a mistrial was declared on September 9th, 2016. But I'm like, how?
I know that when the lawyer was trying to find out what made the jurors kind of like sway with it, they were like, how can we be sure to place him at the work site? So like, or like at like, or something like that. They were like, how can we like be like certain about that? I personally do not if I was on the juror, I do not know if I would need like that much time stamping and stuff like that, especially after like especially his ex-wife's testimony. And everything like that, I really
right,
do
and
not understand
the
it.
Burner phone and
the burner
everything.
Phone and truly every single part of this scenario.
I don't know, but I guess it's good that we have people who take their job seriously before, you know, convicting someone. So
honestly, yeah. So thankfully, a second trial began November 21st, 2016, which is like kind of recent. Like I know not like how long this case was going on for.
It's still 2018 in my mind, so that's a reason to me.
That was also the mind fuck in my head. I was like, that's yesterday, right? And I was like, oh no. I'm like, what's going on? This time, the prosecution found CCTV footage of Lester driving his wife's car, circling Paige's worksite the day that she went missing. So this time happened a lot quicker. So after 4 days of deliberation, Lester is found guilty on all counts. Colorado law only allows for life without possibility of parole. He was given that. Of course, like they always do, Lester is trying to appeal his conviction because there's no physical evidence tying him to the crime, despite all the
Scott Peterson
video footage, et cetera. Exactly.
One thing I read as well is that they had the jury had trouble focusing on all of this proof, all of this evidence, due to kind of what we were saying before, her quote lifestyle end quote, which is absolutely infuriating. Because it was a secret. So if you think about it, I mean, it wasn't a lifestyle. Wow. She wasn't out here. I don't even know how to argue that. But it's just really infuriating. And if, you know, sex work was decriminalized or legalized, then people would be able to be a lot safer and be safer from absolute creeps like this man. Yeah. I need to not have his face on my computer screen. He's so creepy.
Oh, don't do that. Yeah, definitely scary looking guy. And I talk about victim blaming too.
Exactly. And I'm glad you brought that up too, because Chelsea, because I was like, in the span of him just this case going cold, I was in my head, I was like, he could have done this more for cases that for women that just have not been brought the attention to or given the time of day or anything like that. And it's just,
it's true.
It's awful.
Yeah. I think her father, Paige's dad, I don't think the case would have gotten as much attention, which realistically, I mean, most people have no idea about this. But I think he was just such a big advocate for her, and just her, I just want to snuggle her dad. Aww. In an adorable way, not like, a weird way, but it's just
okay on your love so, sack. Okay.
No, he's just so like such like an advocate for her, and obviously, I mean, that's her daughter, but there are people who, you know, just don't want anything done about it. And they're like, oh, well, they're missing now. Would have given up, but he didn't. He was front and center, very involved. And I love that.
Absolutely.
It's sad.
I'm glad that justice they were able to, because I feel so many times with these cases that just remains nothing. So I'm glad he ultimately did get found guilty. But I know it's just so infuriating. And I know like even her kids had to testify to and everything. And it's just such a traumatizing time for that family. So I hope that they are having some peace. Wait, and I also want to, I don't know how much you can talk about it, Chelsea, as a complete kind of a recircling around. You said that you just posted, literally, we're recording this February 24th. You posted today about some stuff in Florida with MLMs. Can you give us any little updates or like teasing that?
So due to legal documents that I've signed, I can't talk.
Okay, that's fair.
I can't talk too much.
I'm not trying to get sued.
But yeah, there's a lot of things in the works. I had a call this morning with some important people, you know, handing over some information to them. I mean, I've made it public before. Yeah, I've been working with lots of organizations and important people to I hate saying, oh, take down Monate, but basically to burn it to the ground so I can laugh over the ashes.
Yes,
you know?
Burn it to the ground. Casual. Like they're burning everybody's scalps.
Literally.
Yeah.
I like that. And everyone can see, because you post on your, I feel like you post on your YouTube like 85 times a week. I don't know how you do it.
My God, I wish. No, only two videos a week. And then I do a podcast episode as well. The Down a Rabbit Hole podcast. So it's pretty exciting. I'm focusing on family annihilators right now, which is really depressing.
Oh.
So
is that cool. People who kill their families?
Yeah.
Well.
Oh, gosh. Those are always the hardest cases. We just did one.
Oh, God. I don't
remember which one.
Shanann Watts?
I remember watching that documentary, like, crying. So that was, I think, a case that I hated covering because it was just so sad. We just did an update on Susan Cox Powell. So that was another one that I was like, I can't.
I feel like the chess cam footage, or not chess cam, my husband's a cop, so he'd be correcting me right now. Every time I say chest cam, he's like, you mean body cam? And I'm like, it's on your chest.
Yeah.
It's a chest cam. Yeah. He's like, I don't just like have titties. And I'm like, shh, be quiet. Yes, you do. You're beautiful. But watching that footage in that documentary and seeing, like, if you didn't get chills when the neighbor turned to the cop and was like, he's acting weird. That's a good human right there.
That's a good human. And that was, I forget what, was that on Netflix? That was a well-done documentary too. Which was
It was bad. Netflix. Yeah. I know, the one well-done documentary on Netflix.
They have one a year, which is, the Tinder Swindler like was the one this year, so it's downhill.
I was going to say, exactly, like a broken clock is right twice a day. Mm-hmm. That's really Netflix and their true crime content at this point. We love them, but.
Love them. Love to do any true crime stuff with them, but yeah.
Shanann Watts was also in the multi-level marketing company, Lavelle, which is also known as Thrive.
Patches, right?
Yes.
Oh my God, that stuff is crazy. But you know, that goes into, that's another more like modernized example of how putting on this facade and trying to, you know, put that forward in this perfect life that this company and this quote opportunity gave you is so dangerous because, you know, and not blaming that, you know, on the MLM, obviously it's her garbage husband's fault. He's a psychopath, but, and that's horrible. And God rest those sweet babies and that beautiful, wonderful woman. But the MLMs in both these cases and in like the Jodi Arias one and all that, those definitely play a big part.
100%.
Yeah.
So for those looking to learn more about why, you know, murder aside, big aside, why MLMs can be so harmful and just, you know.
Just to learn more about them and also to realize, like, that they're not, because some people are still actively in them and, like, that you're not alone and you can get out of them. And, I mean, Chelsea's 0 for 3. I mean, 3 for 3 survive in them. So, you know, you have a good support system here.
Yeah. I mean, and there's people who have been in them for years and years and who were born into them. I mean, that's even a crazier topic that I want to fall down the rabbit hole of. But you can find my YouTube videos on, obviously, YouTube. And I am CC Suarez on there. So just my first initial, middle initial, and then my last name, Suarez. And I post 2 videos a week. I do deep dives, like I said, on certain multi-level marketing companies, on certain tactics, on certain top leaders as well, which they love to send me cease and desist for. They love to try to silence your girl, but I usually do like dramatic readings of them and then just shove them in my cabinet. Yeah, no, it's like, if you don't know the actual definition of like what defamation, slander, and libel is, don't put the wrong definition on a on a cease and desist. Like, who wrote this?
Don't waste your Laura's time.
It's how you know they got their like law school friend, or they're just like, I have a Jewish friend. Can you just write up a legal letter for me?
It was from Legal Shield, the one that Jodi Arias and what's his face were in.
Well then.
Illegal multi-level marketing is sending you a cease and desist for, that's a pyramid scheme in and of itself.
That is, yes.
The pyramid scheme sending you a cease and desist for your pyramid scheme content. Like, holy shit.
Lord.
Yeah, it is absolutely crazy, but I'm not going to be quiet. I'm going to keep talking about it, as are the, you know, other people who make content like me, and we're making waves and making a big difference. I mean, to date, I stopped counting already, but as I told you, Sarah, I've helped over 20,000 people get out of multi-level marketing companies and commercial cults, and actually, I mean, cults in general. I've helped a lot of people get out of Scientology, Mormonism, and then also the Jehovah's Witness too, which is crazy. Because they're cults, whether it's religious or a commercial cult, they're both cults. Yeah. So
it's amazing.
Well, keep on doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Yeah, I know. And keep fighting the good fight, like literally.
Literally.
Doing it.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. Also, follow CC on Instagram at, was it IMCC Suarez?
Yes, IMCC Suarez across all social media, and then just CC Suarez on YouTube.
Fabulous.
Awesome. And thank you so much for coming on and discussing this case with us. We learned a lot.
Yeah.
I learned a lot. Y'all told me stuff that I didn't know, and I even made a video about it. So I'm sitting here like, damn, I didn't know this part.
It's good. Just combine. Yeah, we're all combining forces, everybody's knowledge. Yes.
It's like it's your job or something. You're really good at it.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. Everybody go follow Chelsea, and thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week.
Not Another True Crime Podcast is produced by Jorge Morales Pico and Sean Kilby. Our hosts are Sarah Levine and Danny Murphy. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Sarah Levine. Be sure to follow at NATC Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And send us your emails to natc@betches.com. Betches.